but there had to be something else.
I get the broad picture right, but I always fuck something up in some way, you know? It's when I get everything right from the get-go that people are going to get worried. It's like, you know, I'm actually prepared.
Just open your bag and your army's not in it.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 40K Fireside Podcast. I'm David Gaylor, and I'm joined by my good friend, Vic Vijay. Together, we discuss 40K in the meta from our perspective, along with events we've recently been to and those that have got coming up. So come on down to the Fireside and listen.
And welcome back to episode 34 of 40K Fireside. I'm sounding a little bit huskier than normal. Dave, I don't know if you are as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty shattered.
Yeah, we've just come back from the WTC. We literally came back last night, so we're straight into it because we want to really share as much information about it as we can with you guys and the things we've learned. It's our first WTC, and it's really been an eye-opening and an overall extremely positive experience for both of us. So we're going to kind of dive into everything and kind of run through our expectations, experiences, outcomes, and things we want to improve following on.
Yeah. We are going to be chatting about, a lot of stuff, man. There's so much to cover here. but first of all, we wanted to kind of announce something. We've got a little fundraising effort that we're going to undertake, but it's not just going to be pure fundraising. We're going to be offering some stuff, some incentives as well, if you want to get involved in it. So we have a teammate called Liam VSL. If you know him, he is kind of one of the best players in the world. If you've been crushed by him on TTS, you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. But he's an absolutely lovely chap. He's a young guy, studying, living in Belgium, plays for Team Belgium, and he's got a ticket to the World Champs. So we are hoping that we can generate some money for him to make it to the World Champs. And we're going to be doing this with some pretty cool initiatives, we think. First of all, I can confirm, but there might be people added to this, that we are going to be running a masterclass workshop with Liam, myself, David Gaylard, and Vic Vijay. And I'm sure we could maybe pull some other people in there. I think we might have other people from Team Ignite in there as well. So, you know, the baseline thoughts for that are going to be like a minimum 2 to 3 hour masterclass on anything. We're going to develop a curriculum for it. And then in addition to that, we are going to be giving away a signed Team Ignite shirt. I don't know whose name's going to be on the back of it, but I'm sure we're going to do that for the whole team. Perhaps we'll even take it to the World Champs, and then we'll get everyone to sign it there as well, and then we'll post that off to someone as well. So that sounds really fun. I kind of want to share like that. But if that is something you're interested in, please leave some comments. If there is this episode's going to go live pretty soon, so if you've got any ideas about things that we could do, something that you might be interested in, we will definitely be taking those on board. We want to get this kind of hammered out in the next couple of days so we can get that going for Liam. But that's a huge thing. Do you want to start off with the next one, Vic?
Yeah, man. I mean, that was awesome. So I hope that works out for Liam there. We do have a link to his crowdfunding page regardless if you guys just want to help out, because it'd be really amazing to get a young talent like that able to go to a big tournament in Atlanta. I just want to open up with just kind of putting this out there to everyone who was at WTC, the judges, the refs. The organization was insanely good, but it wasn't just that. I mean, that was the top layer of it, and that filtered down through the rest of the event. This was the best event I've ever been to since I started playing 40K.
Yep.
The atmosphere was insane. Every single person that I met at this event was so nice. I feel like I'm a part of a massive, extremely positive community, and WTC really exemplified that.
Yes.
Every single aspect of this, every single thing regarding the quality of opponents that we faced, the actual way the games were played with the missions and the terrain, everything was absolutely perfect. So a huge thank you to everyone involved with the WTC and everyone who attended.
Yes, yeah, I would love to extend that as well. I had a personal intervention from the judges as well, which saved my bacon. But I would love to thank the organizers of the WTC. I mean, for me, it was the best event I've ever been to. And Vic and I have been to all of the events, right? We've been to, like, you know, We've been to them all apart from WTC, and this one was so far and above the best event I've been to that it was quite eye-opening in a lot of ways. It really is the pinnacle of Warhammer. It's the pinnacle of competition, not just for Warhammer, because the game that we play aside, the level of competition and the sportsmanship is phenomenal. Absolutely insane. There were, I think, 3 yellow cards in the entire event, both the singles and teams. And in the teams alone, over 850 games got played. Over 850 games got played. And that's the best players in the world playing against each other for the highest stakes. So no matter what you may have heard about top level competition, I think that settles the bet, doesn't it?
Oh, you know, 100%. And in our games, we're playing near the top for a lot of this tournament. We had zero issues. Not a single one, our opponents or ourselves, just absolutely zero sportsmanship issues. Everyone was there to win the game in the correct way and win it because they deserve to win the game, not for because they found a way.
Yep. So it was phenomenal. The terrain, fantastic. I am actually, in retrospect, extremely impressed with how they managed to develop a balanced terrain pack for an event and an edition that had only been out for such a short amount of time. That was incredible. You know, the UKTC took us, you know, in retrospect, took us quite a while to get there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be really interesting how the UKTC develops. It's probably one of the most quickest to evolve terrain sets. So it's going to be very interesting now that all the WTC players are back in action and the events are going to ramp up in competitiveness again. Exactly what direction that goes. But I've heard good things from the recent Super Major, so I'm hoping to be quite positive that UKTC does compete with WTC in terms of quality.
Nice. The refs were absolutely impeccable. They had, I don't know how many refing staff they had, but there are, at any given time, you know, there's probably, 120 tables of games going on, and you could shout ref, no one would look at you, you know, like you're a weirdo. You shout out ref, you hold your hand up, and there's a ref in there in, I don't know, 15 seconds, right?
The best is if you shout ref, then everyone around you also starts shouting ref.
And everyone will be like, this guy needs a ref, get him. Absolutely insane. I know why that was insane, because I had about 5 judge calls every game.
Oh my goodness.
But to clarify, that was only because I wanted to be extremely precise on all the rules. And whenever there was like something line of sighty or something distance in charge, my opponent and I just said, let's just call a judge and we'll just get it done there. So like, just to clarify, most of mine were just the things like that, right? Like we had one thing where it was like, do I get the benefit of cover over here, you know? And, you know, some of these you're playing on very little sleep and stuff like that. And everyone was so good about that. Any little rules of direction that I thought, oh, maybe this doesn't work this way, I just called a judge and they sorted it. So a big shout out to the reffing community. They were impeccable. The venue was fantastic. It was enormous. The atmosphere was electric, I think. Mm-hmm. That was one way to put it. It's so difficult to describe if you haven't been, but... as someone who, obviously first time, but I guess Vic, you were a part of the team, so you kind of had a little bit of a better impression what it would be like. But what would happen, guys, is the rounds would happen, the pairings before the round would happen, and that would take half an hour. And then what would happen is all the teams would huddle together in circles, and they would basically have like their team chants. So imagine like a massive aircraft hangar that goes long ways. And in the middle, one half of the hangar is just full for the tournament, right? The other half is empty. And then you have like the USA team chanting like USA, USA. And then Aussies have got one like Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. And then like, you know, you've got the other language ones, like England has one as well.
England.
It was honestly so cool, man. Like that was really cool. And, you know, everyone, there was such a sense of camaraderie between the teams that beat each other, or if you lost to a team, you know, no one was like salty or like, oh, we should have, you know, everyone was like, I think everyone, whether they drew or won or lost, was like, you guys were the better team, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is, again, it's just phenomenal, right? Like it's just kind of mind blowing how you can have that positive, of spirits in the event. So
You know what I noticed really ramped up the tension and the excitement of the event was, obviously, it's our first time really playing with a differential system. We're used to playing win-loss as the absolute main thing, and then battle points as the tiebreaker. Here, win-loss draw does add up to being the key indicator if you want or not. But the way that you actually win a round is by adding up the differentials for each game. And a differential is created by beating your opponent or losing to your opponent by a certain amount. So for every 5 points that you lose or win by, you gain a point of differential with a total of 20 points available for each game. So if you win by 5+ points, or if you win by 6 points, you gain a differential of 1 and win 11-9. And what was really interesting is, because you add up all these scores, you'll go in thinking, okay, I've got 8 tables, so it's maximum 160. So the person who gets more than half the points, 81 points, wins. But that's not how they did it. They did it as a bracket of 75 to 85 points for a team. Is a draw. It's a draw round. And actually, somehow, for this edition, it kind of worked out that if you have equal kind of level of player skill between the two teams, a lot of it is going to end up in that draw category.
It's very drawish. Yep.
Unless someone has like done something, one in the pairings, one on the table, somebody's army design has been a little bit better, or their player skill has been a little bit better. That's what pushes the wins.
Yep.
And there was so much riding on that stuff. It just meant you had to be playing at your absolute, at the best level you could, to try and achieve success for your team.
For 5 battle rounds.
Yeah, absolutely. All the way through those battle rounds, because you're not aiming for a win in your game. A win in your game at an 11-9 is completely different to a win in your game at a 15-5 for your team.
Yep.
And being able to push for those higher differentials or prevent yourself from dropping down into the low differentials means you need to play at peak 40K level all the way through your entire game. And not just give up halfway through, take a random risk, like, oh, I've already lost, let's just do this. You're like, every single point I'm scraping or denying here is gonna be what makes the difference.
And that's what makes great champions, great team players as well. I have to give a special shout out to some people because I was in a bit of a spot of bother, actually, unsurprisingly. I have so much shit going on in my life on August 2, getting married in September. Last day of the singles, I found out that my Marines army is not going to be able to be played because for some reason, I didn't think I needed to put backpacks on my Marines.
That is the most Dave thing ever. That's like, oh, Marines don't have backpacks, right?
I was like... So, I don't know. It's very difficult to describe how stressed I was knowing that I had to play for my team the next day, and my models wouldn't be legal, which is basically I wouldn't be able to play. And so Nathan was playing my army at the time, Nathan from StatCheck. I let him borrow my army for singles, and he was like, yeah, the judges need to talk to you and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then Jay, Mohawk Jay Middlecoat, who, it was so cool to see Jay in a different setting, you know. He did such a great job at WTC as well, which is awesome. And Lim, I think, who is the other head judge, who is, I believe, the ex-captain of Team Germany, or is ex-player of Team Germany.
Yeah, that's right.
They basically told me, Jay was like, hey, David, I know you're a good guy. I know you didn't do this on purpose, but we have to assume that someone, you know, is trying to take advantage of the situation by not fully assembling your models technically, right? And I was like, okay. Long story short, they wouldn't be accepted without the backpacks. I was on my phone. It was going to cost me 900 quid to get the Eurostar back on a Eurostar leaving in an hour to get back to home, pull some backpacks, and then come back the same day, right? So that was one of my options. Lim said, hold up, we'll call Team Germany. They haven't left yet. So I was like, okay. And lo and behold, Lim got in contact. They had over the big thing. He's like, can the captain for Team Germany, Dominic, can you come to the riffing table? And I was like, oh, I didn't really know what to think at this point, right? Because I was just like, I'm so fucked. And then Dominic, they're all on the phone talking in German, like, you know, oh, we need these things. Have you got this? And then Dom, he just put his hand on me. He's like, don't worry, we'll sort you out. And I was just like, I was just about to cry because... It was just, you know, it was such a lifesaver. So yeah, big shout out to Dom, big shout out to Adrian from Team Germany. And there was a guy, Michael, I think, who I'm not sure was a player, but maybe a coach, who actually brought me 25, I think, or almost 30 unpainted backpacks.
What?
So long story short, I've dropped from the last round and I'm painting for the singles event. And yeah, so that just goes to show you like how awesome people can be in the community. And that's just one story, you know, that story was replicated 15, 20 times, you know, of people helping each other at the last minute. Can you get these models? Can you get those models? Which just goes to show how awesome everyone is at the event. You know, it could be like, it could be England helping out USA, one of the biggest competitors, and I'm sure it would happen, you know, which is cool. So big shout out to those guys. I'm glad I got to play my models.
They saved you. All right, Germany, yeah. We owe you one.
I definitely owe them one. Yes. So does that cut up part one?
I think that does it. Let's give some the listeners some jazz music.
Some jazz music, and then we're going to hit you up part two. What are our expectations going in? We're going to go through Team England's run, Team New Zealand's run, and I think you're going to love it because there's so much to talk about there. Catch you guys in a little bit. All right, everyone, we're back. We are back. So I remember in the last episode, Vic, we talked about expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is really interesting for a couple of perspectives. If you're a viewer and you hadn't been following the WTC, I think this would be really cool. But if you already know the results, you know, you probably would have already know what Vic and I wanted to achieve and would have seen them. So do you want to start off with me or do you want to go first on this one?
Yeah, you go for it, man. I'm excited to hear this.
Yeah, so so I think in the last episode, I said I would be happy if we made it to the top of seed four, right? Top of seed four puts us in 27th place, 26th place if we're at the, you know, bottom of seed two, right? Bottom of seed three. And I think I tried to keep my expectations pretty realistic, right? I knew that the caliber of competition at the WTC was enormous and that, you know, us as a team, Team New Zealand, we hadn't really prepared much at all, I would say. I think that's probably fair, especially considering, you know, I'm in the chat with you, Brian, and stuff like that, right? When I know that you guys are literally practicing for a month out, like, no lifing it. so, you know, that was kind of my expectations. But, I mean, my expectations were just vastly exceeded. Team New Zealand won the best newcomer team, and we ended up coming 15th out of 36, which
that is crazy.
I don't know, you can't really compare season to seasons, but that puts us at one of the top teams to ever have placed on a newcomer team. And I think especially as a country that doesn't have a 40k prodigy or history, I think personally that is incredible.
Oh, it's and so each seeding, guys. So seeds are what's used to determine how good a team is for the initial group stages of the WTC tournament. It's a very useful metric, really. And each seed has 9 teams in it. So the top 9 teams will be seed 1 teams.
Mm-hmm.
You, Dave, are in the middle of seed 2.
Yep.
With Crazy. The likes of France, Belgium, Scotland.
Canada is one above
Insane.
Us.
Insane.
Bonkers, right?
Yeah.
We absolutely destroyed it. And you know what? The rounds that we lost were very close. Mm. Okay, so we lost 46 points to Australia. Fair. That's fair. That round was pretty much just a warm-up for us, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
But round 2, 85 against Belgium. But we'll go into this later on. But yeah, this just exploded my expectations. And seeing the team develop over the 7 rounds of Warhammer was one of the proudest things I've been a part of in a long time. There were particularly some players. I want to give a shout out to Charles, who I think is our most improved player by far. He started the tournament getting destroyed by Liam Hackett 20-0. And then I put a lot of effort to work with Charles to make sure he knew exactly what he was doing every single game, every matchup. He would come to me, be like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. Can we chat about everything? You know, and One round, I think, scraped 7 points against Aldari, doing exactly what we talked about, which was phenomenal. You know, most improved player. I also have to give a shout out to a guy called Gabby, who is our sub-in French coach. I don't think he was associated with the French team, but the guy literally saved our bacon. Like, the difference between having a coach and not having a coach is like, I mean, yeah, we never would have done anywhere near as well without Gabby. Phenomenal. So I think New Zealand are, you know, such a small country. Just to put this in perspective, right? Just to, this is kind of funny. Like, Charles, the guy I was talking about, he's played Warhammer competitively for 2 months. 2 months. He's played Warhammer in total for 8 months. It was his second tournament. His second tournament. And you might be asking the question, why would you fly to Europe for Warhammer on your second tournament? Well, that's just kind of the attitude he has, right? Absolutely unbelievable. You know, the tournament sizes in New Zealand, a big tournament is like 50 players, right? 60 players. The biggest tournament ever is like, I don't know, 115 players or something, right? Don't quote me on the numbers here. But, you know, for a country that has almost zero history or prodigy in 40K, that is, I think, I'm not going to, well, okay, I am going to say it. I think that was one of the standout parts of the tournament, seeing how some of the new teams did. And it was such a fun storyline. I know a lot of people back home are following it. It was such a fun storyline to be a part of and to ride. And yeah, I gave it my all in it, and it took everything out of me as well. But yeah, so I mean, you can't ask for much more than that, I think. But
congratulations, man. That's absolutely brilliant, and that's your floor, you know. Yeah. And it also highlights just how powerful it is. To in my opinion, and this is gonna big you up, so make sure your head can fit out of the door here. it's how powerful having a person with your skill set is, because I think you brought that whole team up with your experience and your ability to play teams, do the pairings, and understand the more technical side of winning matchups. That's knowledge that doesn't come naturally to a lot of people, especially if they've only just started playing competitive 40K. But not only have your players been able to receive that information and process it, but you've also been able to tell them and taken the time to tell them. So congratulations to everyone in Team New Zealand. Congratulations to you as well, Dave.
Thank you, man. But there's a bigger half to this, I think. and if my one was, I guess, the most elated, you know, exceeding expectations, I know, Vic, in the last episode we talked about Team England. I think going into this, Team England had an exceptional lineup. I will confess. I will confess that in my drafting prediction, I had Poland and England to win. Oof. That straight up. Had Poland and England to win. You guys had such a sick team this year. Absolutely stacked crazy. And I thought, and a lot of people thought, that you guys were, you had a really, really good shot at winning this year.
Well, I think you could say technically the final game of the tournament, it was England versus Poland. So in that sense, at least we were playing to have a chance to win. The tournament. And, you know, I mean, spoilers, loads of spoilers, but England did finish in fifth place here at this tournament. And it's an interesting one because the number sounds bad, like for what we were aiming for, because we were aiming for the podium.
Yep.
But I've been reflecting on it, Dave. I don't know if it's coping or reflecting, but I've been thinking the expectation should not have been for the podium. The expectation should have been you have to win this tournament. Because actually, the rankings below that, kind of 2 to 7, are a little bit random depending on what path you took, etc.
Yes, I agree.
What I am kind of holding on to is the fact that we were playing in the finals almost.
Yeah,
we were there right to the end, and we were there playing against Poland. And you know, if we won that one, we had a chance of winning the whole thing. Yep. So
your last four rounds were England versus Austria. And Austria are a good team.
Austria were a little bit nuts, to be honest. They finished in eighth.
Yeah. The Austria has, I think, the Wobak brothers on it, right?
They do, yeah.
Who are both really good players.
Kind of really scarily good, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like, Lucas Wobak beat me in the singles with Necrons. The guy's really good. Yeah. And I'm sure everyone on their team is really good. Like, mm-hmm. Austria are really good. Mm. And then I looked it up. Round 5, you played against France, I think, right?
Yep, that's right.
France, who were, I know, I think from their perspective, really trying to push podium this year.
Mm-hmm.
So France have the biggest league, the most amount of money behind them. And you beat them 70-90. Yes. And then it's obviously USA, who ended up coming second, who you draw against on the high side of a draw. Mm-hmm. 84 plays 76 for England, which is a really good result.
Mm-hmm.
And then you play Poland, which is obviously, you know, one of the pinnacle games. You know, I think England, Poland, you know, Poland, USA, those matchups, you know, all you three played each other, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was always bound to be a tough run, but we definitely got a tougher run than some of the other teams.
Yep.
Who finished, you know, in around our area. So,
no, well, I think, you know, if you look at it, so the way I looked at it too is that if you England were in a position to win, we're in a winning tournament T-word position, right? Like a tournament winning position.
Mm.
But if you say, and this is zero disrespect to the team I'm about to mention, mm-hmm. if you say look at Australia or Sweden, I don't think they played anywhere near as hard a strength of schedule as potentially you guys played, right?
Right. So absolutely.
If I look at Australia, they also played Austria, but then they didn't play USA or Poland.
I mean, I think I'm just going to... So there's two things here.
Sure.
One is expectations need to adjust because now I understand the ranking system a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Like aiming for a podium is nowhere near as important as trying to win the entire tournament.
Mm-hmm.
As obvious as it sounds, it's an important difference in mentality. And the second one, I forgot it.
But you also don't have a control over your pairings to some degree, right?
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds strange because I know we also talked about in the previous episode that, you know, 8v8 teams reduce a lot of the variance, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I learned also is that you're playing 8 games, there's going to be 3 or 4 swings in those 8 games. Mm-hmm. And I think some people were right in that the player skill difference isn't as large of a gap, right? Or, you know, does it exist at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things like preparation and pairings make a huge difference. And, you know, one big swing in a game where you were hoping to get a 5, but now you get an 8, can be really big. Or some swings are bigger than that, right? Some swings are like, you're going to get a 7, and now you can get a 12. And it's like, okay, that makes a huge difference when the target area you're trying to hit is a minimum 75, but an 85 plus. So let's say you're on 80 currently, you have a 5-point swing in a game, and suddenly you're on an 85 projected and your coach tells you everyone else to push, right?
Because mm-hmm.
you're never going to lose after that. And you've just, and you're, when you're in like, the difference between being a team playing for 75 and a team playing for 85 is completely different, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. One team is like, we're pushing, the other team is like, we're holding, you know? Mm-hmm. And you can get those numbers coming in all the way from like, turn 2, right?
Yep, exactly.
So it's crazy. Like being on the high side of a draw is quite telling, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And having, you know, having a loss, you really need to look into that. Like we lost against Scotland, which is awesome. We lost against Scotland 69-81, mm-hmm. which in reality, if a couple things go differently, we're all of a sudden at the bottom of a draw.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting as well. Sorry, I talked over there. But
No problem. I mean, I remember my point now. But the one thing I don't want to do here is also make excuses for the team and our performances, because there are definitely significant areas to improve. And personally, going in first time into WTC, my understanding of a lot of things is so different to what I predicted and what I know now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to implement a few things, hopefully, with Team England to try and work with them at least to try and implement some changes that ultimately improve our result next year.
Should we go through your pairings?
Yeah, sure. I mean,
who'd you play around? We don't have to go in depth on everything, but because otherwise we're going to be here for 4 hours probably.
we were in an interesting pod because we had Spain in our pod, and Spain were right at the top of C2, so probably one of the more challenging opponents. And Spain did finish 7th this year, so they're actually an extremely strong team. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So Spain were in our pod. We managed to win our games solidly versus Romania and Bulgaria.
Yes.
And then we ended up playing in Spain. And in the game against Spain, on our matrixes, so this is an area of improvement. I'm going to highlight it now. Area of improvement, matrixes. On this matrix, we had ourselves going for the high end of a draw. That's what that's what we predicted.
Yep.
And when we started playing the game, I think potentially they had a similar matrix to us. And they did a thing which was quite eye-opening, which was, look, they don't care about drawing this. Mm-hmm. They like they either want to win or they want to lose, is the aim. And two of their armies just frontlined and tried to roll to go first.
Mm-hmm.
They got both of them and they won both games 20-0.
Yep, and this is Taroxor against Alex Harrison.
And the Eldari.
And they also won Chris Kinnear versus Manuel Conclave, I believe, playing Eldari, 20-0.
I mean, both of these guys are incredibly good players.
Yes, Taroxor is a very good player as well. Yeah.
So both of them, incredibly good players, got the first turn, deployed to lose the game if they go second, but they're absolutely smashing their opponent if they go first.
Yep.
And our players were not prepared for it. They hadn't set up defensively to survive such an onslaught or hold on to points because their matrix was telling them that they're not holding on for points. They're actually like getting a good number of points or even a win.
Yep.
And all of a sudden it's changing. So we basically were almost 40-0 down right from the get-go here.
What was the mentality of, you know, because the coaches must have come around right after all the first turn roll-offs, right? Like what was the... What was Camp England like after that? Because that's got to be, you know.
I think we're also learning a lot as we go along here because a lot of the team, including coaches, are kind of new players.
Yes.
New people going to the WTC. So at this point, I was just getting like, what's like, how's your game going? That's all. They weren't asking me to do anything ridiculous. So I was just giving my prediction and just... It was about halfway through the game. They were like, you know, any points that you can push for is good. Just that soft, you know, English way of saying it. we ended up playing it and we managed to like express a little bit, I think, of player skill advantage or advantage in our list compositions through the other games.
Yep.
And we ended up drawing, but at 83. So this was despite the 2-0-20s.
Yep.
And that's heartbreaking to me.
Yeah.
That's really heartbreaking because I think we had we definitely had the better lists in my opinion.
Yep, I agree.
Preparation, no idea. But I feel we also had player skill advantage across the whole team averaged out.
Yep.
And they did the only thing that would have got them a draw. So
yep.
Fair play to Spain. They managed to keep us to a draw and hold a draw for themselves as well.
Yep.
But I think... This is a big thing because even during my preparation, I don't think I understood how you're meant to play in teams tournaments. You know, when we played in Birmingham teams, like I was playing as a singles player. In these first three rounds, I was playing as a singles player.
Mm-hmm.
In all of my preparation for months, I was playing as a singles player. And it's only after this game, I feel like something clicked in my head on how I'm actually meant to play the game. I saw my opponent, I was playing this very good opponent, their Blood Angels player.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he was like precisely working out how he can do primary denial and everything, I was like, every single opponent I'm gonna play from now on is gonna be playing like this guy. And I need to be on the same level as him if I wanna compete here.
For sure.
And it all clicked. So everything from here onwards is a completely different style of me playing. I just understand 40K so much more. So thank you, Spain, for that.
Yes. I think Spain did the only thing they could in their position. I think their back was up against the wall and they went for a gamble. And it's exactly what I would have done. We did something similar against Scotland as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're at a listed disadvantage and, you know, potentially a prep disadvantage and maybe a slight player skill average disadvantage, then why would you not, right?
Mm-hmm.
What have you got to lose?
Absolutely.
So well played, Spain. That was a super interesting round. I think the whole hall was aware that you two were playing.
Everyone was really on top of that game because that was the, I think, one of the highest chances for an upset
in the group stages.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Another upset, Belgium draw against Australia.
Yes, come on, Belgium.
And New Zealand drawing against Belgium was quite an upset as well, I think.
Come on, New Zealand.
On an 85. Oh, it's got him! Fantastic. Oh, 3 victory points I would have gotten. Our turn-in player also forgot to just shoot his bio-balls on turn one. 4 VPs, that would have got it.
Oh, that's heartbreaking. Oh,
it's all good. Oh my God. It happens, you know. It happens. Round four, Austria. You were playing... this looks like a bit more of a convincing one, but you guys scrape out an 87 versus 73. I think everything here kind of looks like it goes to plan, right? Although some things I think you guys got the better end of. Chris Kinnear with Kel Space Marines is 14-6 against Orcs. That strikes me as a little bit high. Mm-hmm. Nassim's Death Watch against Imperial Knights, 14-6, which strikes me as a, like 2 points too high maybe. Mm-hmm. But then again, also Josh Roberts' Custodes 18-2 against Chaos Demons seems a little bit high as well.
Yep. We definitely had an advantage across the board in this one. But then if you go right down to the bottom, the Warback Brothers strike. You know, Lucas
These
Warback.
These fucking guys, man.
He's wild. So Lucas Warback getting an 18-2 versus our guard with Necrons is outrageous. So that kind of evens out a lot here. And we were playing, again, Matrix was a high end of a draw. I think it was about 80 points on Matrix. Yep. Mm-hmm. So we needed stuff to go our way. And it did go our way pretty much all the way down, except for Alex's game. Mm-hmm. And I got to play a game against possibly one of the best 40K players I've ever played in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I played against Thomas Warback, who won the singles, Warmaster singles. And he was playing Eldari with kind of, you know, your usual Eldari list, Night Spinner, Yin Karn, and a Wraith Knight. It was super interesting to play him because he's incredibly precise. Lovely, lovely guy, but incredibly precise. And he had a phenomenal knowledge of the matchup. Like one story which makes everyone laugh is on his first turn, he asked me like, oh, how many Cabal points do you have? I said, look, I have 13 on the board. And then he said, okay, cool. So if I kill this sorcery, you'll be on 11, which means you can't Temporal Surge and Doombolt. Yep. And I was like, hold up a second. Here we go. I see how this game is going to be. he played a phenomenal game. But this particular game highlights one of the advantages that we had from not collaborating, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In that this T-Suns list was created in isolation from the rest of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And the tech choices in the T-Suns list here, for example, the little exalted sorcerers on disc who can move quite fast, their infantry, but importantly, their psycho models that can then A, slow down an enemy model, or B, you can activate stuff through them, is incredibly helpful in this game. I can give you an example. An exalted sorcerer on disc is infantry, so it can go in a rhino. So when it disembarks, it can move 15 inches. You can then temporal surge, so they move again, and that'll be another 12 inches at that point. Mm-hmm. If you have 12 Cabal points on the board, you then have 7 left over at this point, which allows you to either Doombolt to do some mortal wounds, or to activate Echoes of the Warp, which lets you do a free stratagem, and you can do Warp Sight, which allows the rest of your army to fire in directly.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very powerful turn one play. And you know, this play was available to me against Thomas. He managed to find a counter by rolling the correct things on his decan and Overwatch. But if I'm going first, which I did in this game, then if you use your command point to do an Overwatch, you then can't Phantasm. Mm-hmm. So it's a win-win for me no matter how this situation goes. If the character does get in behind the Eldar army, extremely easy to do because they can't Overwatch on the Temporal Surge move, you then have the option of, say, Doombolting a lone operative, taking 5 wounds off a Wraith Knight, or if you're willing to accept the Overwatch and remove the Phantasm, and then they choose not to Overwatch, you can also slow the Wraith Knight so that the Phantasm is half his movement, so he's only moving 5 inches rather than 7.
Yep.
And then you shoot afterwards, so then you can shoot one of their characters at the same time.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of plays with that, and when you put kind of a Wraith Knight down to 12 wounds, they're in danger territory against the T-Sun's army, because now the vast majority of things in the army with some kind of combo will kill you. Be that Magnus shooting you with armor saves turned off, any Rubric Marine unit shooting you with armor saves turned off, anything double doom bolting you, you're dead with the Wraith Knight. There's loads of tricks, but you need to have designed them into your T-Suns list. Yep. And I think the majority of T-Suns lists were not designed to at all play this game, but mine was. So I got a 14-6 in this game against Thomas Wolbach, which was probably not what they had on their matrix.
And as you gave me the compliment before, I think it's unanimously agreed that you had the best T-Suns list in the whole tournament.
Yeah, it worked out so well. That side of things worked out so well for me because, you just find the right combination of units which are correct and they're hidden in the T-Suns list is the thing. Yep. Like, it's not obvious at all.
It's not obvious at all. And I think that I think I came around to every game you were playing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like every game. I tried to come around every game. And I could just tell that you were playing such a high level as well, which is awesome to see. Because I think that, you know, after Warhammer Fest, was it? You know, mm-hmm. Where you didn't make the top cut, it was a bit disappointing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you had a bit of a dry spell there.
Mm-hmm.
To see you playing so well, I was just like, man, the guy's so good at this game.
I was so happy, man. Like, especially from this point, just everything just clicked for me. And
Joy. Nice. That's Austria. Mm-hmm. Got the win there.
Yeah, that's it.
Got him.
Got a tiny win on that one. Mm-hmm. I think it's a 1-point win.
But it's a nice big win against France here, who I have to say,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if we have many French listeners, so this is probably all right to say. But I think France placing so low in seed mm-hmm. two is another big storyline for the year.
Mm-hmm.
France have a huge league behind them. They have they have a lot of money behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of my takeaways from the French selection process is that maybe the French selection process is maybe not the best way to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you know, France have always been a very strong team
mm-hmm.
and they have more resources than potentially anyone. Not placing in the top seed is bitterly disappointing, I suspect, for them.
Oh, yeah, but I think so.
I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but I think they would agree with that as well.
Yeah.
And England beat France 90-70. This one looks. Is there any big surprises here? Manny 19 winning Gene Steeler Colt is a bit strange.
Ouch.
is Manny's list good against Gene Steeler Colt? That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is a key point because let's say that you got to see Manny play against GSC.
Mm-hmm.
And Manny got to see, let's say, Brian play against GSC.
Mm.
I think both of you guys were like, oh, yeah, that actually works. But just everyone missed it and went in completely opposite directions. Because Brian would have tried 2 Wraith Knights and Manny would have tried 20 Wraith Guard.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm sure both of them are playing GSC with the Eldar, right?
Yes. I think Brian's list is better.
Because you have been on that side of the preparation.
Let me rephrase. I think Brian's list is better against Gene Steeler Colt.
Mm-hmm.
I think the double Wraith Knight lists are weaker against GSC in general.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Manny's list was better for the tournament. Because what I realized is that, so first of all, I think 19-1 is an underperformance from GSC in general.
Yeah,
I agree. So I wouldn't say that reflects the matchup necessarily, but I think Manny's list was better for the tournament because what I realized is that in so many of the Eldari games, you're going into just total stomps anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to obliterate your opponent. And actually having double Wraith Knight is actually better to do that
mm-hmm.
because you're going against people that are going to be trying to survive until 5 turns for 90% of your games. Yep. So the one thing that can see into people's ruins is a Wraith Knight. And that allows you just to step on people so much more. So I actually think for the WTC, I think Manny's list is better. I think for a singles tournament, I would rather play the 20 Wraith Guard.
Yeah, I mean, I probably go the opposite way and probably drop the Wraith Guard altogether. So it's just completely different kind of mentalities.
Crazy, right?
For it. I know. But yeah, so Manny got the big win here. And that happens sometimes in this particular game.
If you put too much Deep Strike, you know, you can get screened out super easy. And
That's it.
Well, 19-1, huge. Yeah. That one carried you guys around a bit, I think, right?
Oh,
if that went normal, you know,
16-4,
4-16.
Yep.
6-14. I got around the third time. Then all of a sudden it's a draw.
Yep.
So,
I got a good one to swing up the CSM game, which is potentially one of the tougher ones for T-Suns. Managed to swing this one up to a 13-point win against Mr. Champion. This was like one of the games, like strategically, one of the best ones I've ever played. Just like everything just fit into the perfect place. And he was such a graceful player in this because he said at the end, a lot of dice did not go his way. Like he was getting really tilted as it went on. And at the end he said, look, the dice didn't go my way, but you played better than me.
Yep.
And it takes a bit of grace to do that. So.
Yep, for sure. 100%. Round six. This is the round against USA.
USA.
Actually, you know what? I have to be honest. Like I would give USA stick for sometimes coming across overconfident, etc. But these guys were so nice to play against.
Yeah.
Like I think we all had such a blast playing against them.
They're all super lovely.
So
I was I was chatting with Jaime quite a bit throughout towards the later parts of the tournament. I was like, hey, you know, what are you playing against? And he was, oh, I played against this. I was like, oh, did you think about this and that? And Jaime's a lovely guy as well because we're both playing Death Watch. So he played against Tao and then I was playing against Tao. So I was like, hey, you know, how did you find the matchup and stuff? Which was really cool. This is a 76-84 draw. So, you know, on the high side of a draw for you guys, we've got some interesting 10-10s here, I think.
This one's heartbreaking.
Yeah. You
know, this one for me is really heartbreaking because I think we caught them out with my game in this one.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And that one game should probably have been enough to get us the win because it's the one where... So my game was against Orcs here. And I think pretty much every team would have this as a moderate loss for the T-Suns. I don't know if you kind of would have agreed.
I thought it was... I think a lot of people thought it was like 6-14 for T-Suns.
And 14, this was... Orcs. Exaggerated by the fact that Lucas, their Orc player, had just beaten Pumbaa the day before. So the Poland T-Suns player, 16-4.
We got a big win.
So this was like the perfect situation to put me down as the first defender, the first player to go down, and they give me two options to play against. And of course, they're going to give Orcs as one of those options.
Yeah,
They would think on our Matrix and their Matrix is a big win.
What was it? Orcs GSC or something, right?
Yeah, Orcs and GSC, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
So yeah, in this situation, that alone should have been enough to get us the win because in my opinion, I think my list and a certain strategy of playing it allows you to beat the Orcs consistently with a big win.
Yep.
And so, which is, just sneaky.
which I think puts you as the MVP of this round, surely, right?
Yeah. And so with this knowledge, we got that first pairing. All everyone had to do was just hold around their colors.
Yep.
We even got one upswing with Chris Kinnair getting a 17-3 win against Jaime.
Yes.
And then we got a bunch of ties. You know, our GSC did not get enough points against Anthony Vanella's CSM. We ended up with
that 10-10 there. That's a pretty big surprise, that one. I think rolling a 10-10 against GSC, CSM. CSM, you have almost no tools. So that one's quite surprising. What was the mission on this one?
This mission was, it's a really good mission for me against Orcs here. This one is 10 points for a maximum on primary for holding 5 points for each objective.
Yep.
And then at the end of the game, you score an additional 5 for each one you hold up to 15. So it's back loaded on the primary and it can be quite drawy if need be.
Yes.
So and yeah, Mike wasn't able to push a differential. Oh, sorry. Carry
on. No, I was going to say Max Schuckman, playing against Josh Roberts, 20-0, Eldari versus Custodes, which is not the biggest surprise, but you do kind of hope for a 2 or 3 on the Custodes there, don't you?
The thing is, their Custodes also played our Eldar. So we had both of the same matchup going on.
Yeah.
But their Eldar beat our Custodes 20-0.
Yeah.
And our Eldar only beat their one 13-7.
Yeah. Which is, it just goes to show, guys, that like, it doesn't matter what your role is in a team tournament. Every single person matters just as much as everyone else. Like John Lennon scraping 7 against Manny is enormous. And then Matt Schuckman 20-0ing Josh Roberts is enormous too, you know. But then at the same time, obviously, you know, Vic overperforming, Chris overperforming, stepping up is huge as well, right? Sean Naden 17-3 against Nassim Deathwatch. I didn't get to see much of that game.
Yeah, good effort from Nassim, to be fair.
I think Deathwatch doesn't, funnily enough, pair that well into the NIDs.
Not into that particular NID list.
Can be tough. Desolators are not great in that matchup.
Yeah, good effort from Sean actually creating that list because that was
One of the standout lists I think of the tournament too. I think Brody Milton slash, I'm pretty sure Eric wrote it. Eric Lathuris's Tyranid list as well was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I think that was one of the standout lists of the tournament as well.
So with the game against the Orcs, because I know so many people are interested in this, mm-hmm. there's one thing I want to say, because what happened was Adam Camilleri on the War Games Live thing said like that we went home, all of us, and all we did, like the entire of Team England, is watch the stream to work out how to be Orcs.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure how exactly he got that, but actually me and Nas went home and we wanted to read any funny comments about his game on stream.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no, like, and that's a very bad use of time, I want to tell everyone. You finish your game at 8 p.m., go try to have dinner, and you're trying to do the Matrixes for the next day by about 10 o'clock.
It's people like you that make my life hard.
Right, you are not going to want to be sitting down for 2 hours preparing for a game that you very likely won't play against. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there was none of that. It was, I played one practice game into Orcs before coming to the tournament, and I was lucky enough to have played that one practice game against Lucas's list, mm-hmm. Which I thought was the best Orc list in the tournament, because it had 9 transports in it, which is a huge amount. Lucas has won every single one of his other games. He is in the Best in Faction podcast, and you know, I asked all the guys and they said he's by far the best player on the podcast.
Yeah.
And he was a very, very good player. But if the output profiles in my list are a little bit different to most lists, where you say have the Terminators, a lot of strength 4, strength 5,
mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of the other European lists, which were running multiple sorcerers, which is at mm-hmm. strength 5 on their profile, whereas my list is a huge amount of strength 6.
Mm-hmm.
And strength 6 is a very powerful breakpoint to finish off entire bricks of orcs, and also to push through damage onto the trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And
trucks are T10?
Trucks are T9/10.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a good breakpoint. And it essentially what happened was, this game is purely a strategic game. There needs to be 2 things which happen. One is you need to be able to control the war turn, where they're going to hit you with multiple units. And you can easily do that in 10th edition because melee has some severe limitations. You just stand in single file behind a wall,
mm-hmm.
they can't get into base contact with you, so they can't fight in a second round. Mm-hmm. You significantly reduce the number of attacks going to you, and they find it very hard to go through a rubric squad and the character. You often just lose 3 to 4 rubrics. You don't even usually lose the sorcerer. And they have to go for the war turn if that's how they've been playing it against all other T-Sons lists, because they think they'll just overwhelm you. You can't kill all of them, and they'll kill you the next turn.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you die on the turn that you go in on the war turn? That's where the problem happens. And Lucas went in on turn 2. I cleared an entire flank where he then couldn't engage me. So then he started playing the mission. And then I killed the next section of the board, which was his deployment zone in this case. And then I killed the middle of the board. And then I just pinned him into his last corner.
Yep.
And if he had known to play completely passively from turn 1, this game is a 12-8 win to the T-Suns.
Mm-hmm.
But who in WTC is going to be able to do that or come up with that decision from turn 1?
It's very tough.
It's impossible. So as soon as he pushes into me, it's going from to a 16-19 win for the T-Suns, if it's played correctly by the T-Suns player.
Just goes to show the enormous difference. You know, 16-4-ing Pumba, who, if you don't know, Pumba is guys captain of Team Poland, obviously a very good player, to then losing 3-17 against Vic. So, you know, you can't blame Lucas in that scenario, can you? You're like, I just 64 Pumba, so like, my matrix is probably right at this point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's such a tough, you know, you can't, I think anyone, if we were all Lucas, would just think the same thing, right? Just be, it's probably 15-5 or something, right?
But unfortunately, it wasn't able to push us to a win. We were 2 points off the win on this one. It's so heartbreaking, these two, the Spain and the America one. Because we had them, you know? It is what it is.
Whew, round 7. This one is a bit of a shellacking.
Yeah, we lost 100-60.
Which I think is the biggest differential, and I'm not trying to be mean, but it is the biggest differential between any of like the top teams have ever gotten against each other, right?
I think in this situation, we were out-prepared. Their matrix was much better than ours. Their pairings were better than ours.
Mm-hmm.
They played on every table better than us. And they absolutely deserved to smash us on this one.
Yeah.
Like, It's not even eye opening. It's just like that's just the matter of fact. They were just the better team. Mm-hmm. Absolutely deserve to destroy us and win the WTC off the back of this round.
There we go. One guy who I was watching quite a few of his games, Skark, the embodiment of an artillery operator, it looks like. Just bodying Josh Roberts like 20-0 with the guard. Pumba getting the 14-6 match against Nassim, which is a fun match to watch.
Oh, that actually hurts, you know.
What did you have T-Suns against Death Watch as?
Wait, what do you think that game is?
I think you probably beat me 12-8.
Right? Okay, at most.
Does that
right?
seem fair? At most, yeah.
So possibly, you know, but even then there's a chance of it being right around the draw mark.
Yep.
If both players are equally skilled.
Yep. I think the Proteus Kill team is definitely better in that matchup.
Oh, the Proteus Kill team is great in that matchup. Yeah. So, yeah, that's, you know, Josh going massively down on his matrix, Nass going massively down on his matrix. Dude, absolutely bodying Robbo.
Straight up 20-0. And your Tyranids is your list that you're trying to bust and try to get a 3 or 4. Dude are able just to shut Matt Robinson out of that one. Gito, 11-9 against GSC.
He held GSC.
And Mike Porter's playing Aberrants, which I played a lot of Necrons. And I think one of the themes for this tournament, I said it so many times, that Necrons are good, is that no GSC player wants to play into Necrons.
Yep.
Because you go for it, you bounce, you're in really bad shape after that. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, if you're a GSC player, you're like, your matrix is basically green against everything. Then if you get said, okay, you're going into Necrons, you're like, well, I throw in more demo charges and I didn't, you know, I either rolled low, bounced, and then it's just like, you haven't got any resources to chew through Necron bricks after that, which is so rough. I mean, Aberrants are a lot better than a demo squad in that matchup. Mm-hmm. But Gito holding a 9-11.
It's another one's nice. Down. Another one color down. Yeah. And then I'm playing against Crazy's Tao.
Yep, I was watching this game a little bit as well.
Oh man, he was getting me. But you know, he played it really, really well. We both like said, you know, this is one of the best games we played in WTC.
Yeah.
It was nice and tech. I was a little bit fatigued at this point, but he was playing it beautifully, getting every bit of primary denial, and he understood the matchup a little bit better than me. I hadn't really practiced into Tau, so I didn't understand the damage profiles. But as the game was playing out, I think it did roughly play out how it should. Which probably puts the T-Suns at kind of a 12-8 win. Yep. I had a really good first. I caught him out on my first turn because he tucked in with his Crisis unit behind a nice big ruin.
Yep.
Exalted Sorcerer went right behind the ruin and activated Magus. Indirect Fire. The entire army shot this Crisis unit. Unfortunately, you know, it didn't quite work out. I killed 5 of Crisis suits, I think. So it was one guy and the Cold Star. They kill 2 targets. Like they go through one Cold Star on his own goes through a Rubric Squad because it's and the character because he gets sustained hits on 5s.
Yeah, Those if there's one thing I learned about Tau, it is that squad literally deletes anything in the game it looks at, but it basically does that once.
Yeah, it does. So you've got to, if you're going to make an attack on them before they made an attack on you, you have to remove the entire unit, which is easier said than done. We played it out. He had a little swing at the end where he rolled 3 Seeker missiles into Magnus on the last turn. So I'm like, okay, yeah, Magnus stays alive. I'll just get deployed teleport homers, get my primary bonus at the end. The 3 Seeker missiles hit with 3 sixes, which is 9 hits against Tau. So there's just one bang Magnus. He didn't even shoot the railguns. Brutal.
So
he managed to take me down from the 12-8 to a 10-10.
We had Meissen, who, if you don't know, is just like, I mean, considered one of the best players in the world. And on his, I think this, a lot of people said this is a good year for Poland. You have Duda on Aldari and Meissen playing GSC. Both factions, which are extremely, you know, the best 2 factions in the game. And they have these 2 players in particular on it, which is, you know, great for them, right? 11-9 against Harrison's Militarum, which I think is a great result for Harrison, right?
Good effort, Alex. He hadn't built it for playing GSC, which he could have done if he played something more like what Skark was running.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So good effort from Alex. He hit his color.
And a match I watched last night because I was... for some reason after playing the WTC, I still wanted to talk about 40K. Victor playing against Chris Kinnear, a 13-7 win for that, which is, if you watch the game, I think Chris kind of gets told he needs to push a little bit through it, but I watched that game and I was extremely impressed by how Victor played. That guy is extremely good. So that was a super interesting match.
Went down on that one.
And then Leisu getting 3 points against Manny's Aldari as well with the Land Raider.
Good effort from Manny there, actually.
Yeah, do you think so?
17. I think so. I think that there's a chance that, like he gets 15 or something. He actually pushed that to 17.
Okay. Which concludes the end of round seven. Mm-hmm. How were you feeling after just immediately after the scores came in? Sort of, what was your initial reaction if you can remember it?
I think we were very happy to lose to Poland.
Yeah.
Fine, whatever. And I think it just kept reverberating in our minds. Like, could we have beaten USA? Should we have beaten USA when we had the chance? Like, not even Spain. It was just the USA game was really stinging.
I guess what would be interesting to hear is if at some point in that USA match, the coaches make the call, we're looking at a draw here, and we need to just take risks, or was it more like we're looking at the high side of a draw, just try and scrap for points? You know what I mean? Because the difference between those two calls may seem small, but it's, you know, I mean, you got to think that if you're on the high side of a draw on turn three, then you're telling your players, take big risks. You know?
Yeah. I there was a point where I told the coaches, look, I could get 19 here.
Right.
And like they were like, if you hit 19, you know, there's that kind of tone. If you hit 19, and it would have won us the round if I hit 19. Yeah. So I think.
But did they say, if you hit 19, or did they say 100% go for the 19, you know,
it's different, right? I mean, it was actually from round three.
Yeah.
They said like every single point. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, right? Like that's different.
If they just say telling you a score.
Exactly, right? Like if I as a coach come to you and say, you need to scrap for every single point, like okay, great, yeah, sure. But if I come to you and say, I need you to push as hard as you can, regardless of the risk, like you know what I mean? Like that's two different things, right?
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I get it. It's a bit hard to know, to be honest.
Yeah, of course.
At that point, when you're playing around that draw mark, you often don't get the information kind of all coming together like that.
But that's how important like good coaching can be as well, right? It's huge, right? Just something. No, that was just something interesting I picked up on just then as well, you know? Unfortunately, you're going to have to think about that for the next year.
Yep, that's it. I'm going to have to move on from that one.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, I don't know if you want to pick out some kind of key parts of the Team New Zealand journey.
Yeah. So obviously we played Australia first, and they pretty much destroyed us. So we lost 46-114 against Australia. Mm. I think if we played them at the end of the tournament, we could have gotten 60 points.
Mm.
And that just goes to show you how much we improved through the tournament. Mm-hmm. After round one, after we got the draw against Belgium, after round two, it was like a completely different team. We were, not only were the players like, they were familiar with the terrain, they're getting used to like, eight out of eight of our players had never played a WTC round before. Mm-hmm. So basically, round one, we're learning everything, which I think was cool. So I played a guy called Jeremy. I'm just getting his last name. Jeremy Martino. Lovely guy, man. Super lovely guy. We played the exact kind of game you would want to play in 40K. Technical, tough, but fair and balanced, you know? So Jeremy was super lovely. I think this may have been one of the best games I played, I was really happy about because I had some very bad rolls in this game. One turn I missed five charges. One of those was a 5-inch charge with my Proteus kill team onto his whittled down Terminator brick, which is on his objective that's going to last till the end of the turn and score on 15 points. So, you know, I think on turn three, before I whiffed massively, it was probably looking 12-8 to me. And man, I was playing so good this game. Like I had like 28-inch deep strike bubble to protect my desolators from rapid ingress and then obliterator move and then indirect shoot. Like it was just, it was just fantastic. I was super chuffed at how I was playing, which was a good feeling. And I was getting some pretty rough dice rolls. And Jeremy was also super nice. But I just told him, hey man, you know, Win, lose, just try and play well. And that was kind of my philosophy for that as well. So I was, you know, the round, obviously, we weren't going to win. But yeah. I was just happy that I was playing well in general. Sure. Because sometimes I can be a bit hit and miss, depending on how serious I'm trying to take things. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to see that I could get back to my shape, nice. Get back to the form.
Solid.
Yeah, so that was a really interesting match. Congratulations, Australia. Obviously, hands down, deserve it. They were great as well. But round two. Oh, man.
Let's go.
You know, I'm just going to preface this. I was up till 2 a.m. every night doing simulations on the pairings. I was up till 2 a.m. doing the sims. As soon as the round's finished, everyone get their matrix in. I was directing the team to, hey, you need to check these lists out. Let me know if there's anything weird. We need to get together, talk about things, everything like that. Doing simulations, you know, investigating all the lists, thinking about strategies, asking other teams what, you know, what was probably very common for me. I was talking to other teams who had previously played these teams, just because I know kind of everyone sort of. You know, hey, what did you play against these guys? Like, what are they open with? Who do you think their strong players were? Like, this is the amount of information I was trying to collect. And I think it really shone through because our pairings were very good for us the entire tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I think pairings make just the massivest difference. Skill gap is obviously good, but it's, you know, obviously favorable to have. But skill gap doesn't mean anything if you get put into a bad pairing.
Mm-hmm.
So we were very happy with the pairings we got against Belgium. And Liam Vissel for our team does the pairings for Belgium, right? Mm-hmm. And Liam is extremely smart. So I was well aware that they were going to be well prepared. So I had to put in like even more effort than usual. But the pairings we got were our Imperial Knights versus their Death Watch. Okay, that's very nice. Good because Death Watch kind of struggle against Knights. Necron Mirror. Okay, I favor my boy Jonty in that. Jonty has been playing. He played fantastic the whole tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Seiko versus John's Tyranids. So Chaos Space Marines against our Tyranids. Good for us because Alexander Seiko is one of the scariest players on the team. And Tyranids were our weakest faction. And if we could just bust them into a drawish matchup, then fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Our Custodes player, who is the newest player, playing their Eldari, he got 8 points.
That's insane. 8 points.
And so I worked with Charles and coached him through the entire mission. We dissected the mission. Mm-hmm. We realized that you could deploy your objective marker from the home ruin, cleanse teleport homers. I told him, you pick this table, you put four models here, you measure the Wraith Knight. You measure the Wraith Knight 7, and then it moves 10. Every single turn, you take 15 minutes. You put the dice where the Wraith Knight is, and then you establish where it can be, and then you tell your opponent, can this see it, can it not? Wherever it can move, 5 turns of the game, you must do that. And he did exactly that. He actually came back and said, this was the best game of 40K I've ever played in my life. Which granted is only about 2 months of competitive play, but like a 12-8 versus Eldari, and he's played for 2 months, is
that's
pretty
beautiful.
Sick. Yeah. And then our Eldari got the 20-0 into Knights because, I mean, what can you do as Knights in that matchup?
Mm-hmm.
You just get obliterated. 20 Wraithguard is so insane against Knights as well. Our GSC actually lost 12-8 to Custodes. And then Liam 20-0'd our Chaos Space Marine player.
Oh, no.
And then I win 16-4 against Frederick Joubert on Gene Steeler Colt. We have an absolutely lovely game.
Beautiful.
I was obviously very confident in this matchup. I was very surprised they gave me this one because I played against Yokel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently they had played GSC versus Death Watch and they thought it was like a 12-8 loss for Death Watch, for GSC, mm-hmm. Against Guillaume. So I guess I had a bit of X factor that game. Frederick Joubert was lovely. So we were chuffed on an 85 win that one. And the team sensation after that was like, guys, we almost beat Belgium. Like, what?
That was insane. Keeping them to a draw was, no one in the room would have expected it. And not only that, you almost won.
Almost won. And then we played Portugal, who we were feeling very confident against. This was my prediction going ahead. I was like, the one team I want to beat is Portugal. We beat them 113-47. So this one went really well for us. I 20-0'd their Orc player. That was fun. And we had another 20-0 Chaos Space Marines against Knights. And then a 19-1 Eldari against Eldari Mirror matchup. That was a pretty sick start to day two. 1-1-1. We were super happy.
Yeah, well done, man. That's a solid start.
The thing about it is that you're going to be playing against better teams the next rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Because in your pod, you know, you've probably got one team under you, one team well above you, and one team near you. Well, I was very crucially aware that we were going to get matched into some team that would be very close to us, who had performed similarly in the pods, right? And we get matched against Finland, who are a WTC before, that they've, you know, they've been to WTC. And so, you know, I was a bit worried, right? I was unsure. I was unsure if the Belgium was kind of a fluke or not. So, yeah, we're going into them. Finland were absolutely lovely. And we get the pairings. Absolutely ace this time as well. This goes so well for us, this one. We get our Imperial Knights into Custodes, which is good for us because our IK was one of our worst pairers. And it's a pretty drawish matchup, IK versus Custodes, you know. You know, not a huge amount in it, really. We get our Custodes into Astra, the Astra Militarum, which is the full indirect list, which, if it's Skark, maybe we lose 20-0. But I coached Charles there again, and I looked at his table on turn three, and I thought, fantastic, he's done exactly what I would have done. So Charles gets 6 points against Astra there. I 20-0 their Chaos Demon player. I basically tabled him in three turns. I got a little bit lucky on one roll, but he got very lucky on the first turn. So I played super well that one. If you don't, if you remember, Vic, there was a guy with his shirt off.
Yes.
I played against this guy.
Oh, did you? Okay. Juso.
And so there's a funny photo of I rip off my shirt at the start of the game, and then we pose down against each other. A super lovely guy. He was playing six greater demons, like three Lords of Change, Kairos, Bellicor, Shalaxy. But Deathwatch is super sick against it. Double Oath is insane. Infiltrators to block stuff. Proteus kill team. I have great melee, great shooting. Only my Desolators are not that great because he can indirect them, and then I can't target him outside of 18. So I decided to put my Desolators in a very interesting spot where I could have Armor of Contempted and cover if he went within 24 inches of indirect to shoot him. But then at the same time, I'd be able to move 6 and shoot his army because I'm now within 18, basically. So that one was really well played. Our Aldari loses 11-9 to GSC. And then 11-9 to LGSC versus their Aldari, so basically a wash. We get Chaos Space Marines against Deathwatch, which is a bit of a tough matchup for Deathwatch, especially because we have 12 Obliterators, 10-10 draw. Our Necron player 19-1 is their Orc player, and then we lose 15-5 on Tyranids versus their Necrons. So pretty convincing round. I get my first 20-0, which is nice to finally get under the bag. Right. Deathwatch, I think in hindsight, wasn't a great army for me because I didn't get... A lot of teams were kind of knew who I was, and would therefore try and just sandbag me as much as possible, not give me a good matchup. So,
yeah. Didn't stop you though, did it?
Yeah, I got a couple, but not as much. You know, I would have liked to have been on Army Row, could have just reliably 20-0'd or reliably pushed people. Yeah, so we win that one, which is great, but we've got Italy next, and Italy are a good team.
Yep.
They have had years where they've been extremely good and years where they've been a bit under. They were infamous last year with some sportsmanship stuff, but I'd like to say on record, Italy were lovely. Absolutely fantastic bunch of guys. Every single game we had was just a pleasure. Everyone was super lovely.
So glad to hear that.
Yeah, which is awesome, right? We get our... So one crucial thing that I know, right? So I look through all the lists, I'm studying all the lists, and this is like in the hour you get before rounds, right? Studying all the lists, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, Matrix is looking a bit bad. And I'm like, let me just double check the Death Watch list. It's definitely got infiltrators, right? No infiltrators.
Boo.
No infiltrators.
That one.
First defender, GSC. What do they put into it? Death Watch and something else.
Oh, no. Man.
Snap pick, Death Watch. Yeah. And Charlie and I were talking, our GSC player. I was like, Charlie, no infiltrators. It's just 50 Marine bodies. Should be good. And then 16-4 win for our GSC versus Deathwatch, which is massive. Our IK 16-4 is their Custodes, which is great. 15-5, their Necrons versus our Chaos Space Marines, which is a bit of an upset. Their Aldari 7, I get 7 points against their Aldari versus with Deathwatch. This mission was so bad. There was no objective marker in the middle, and both of the objective markers were in the open. So yes, I spent an hour measuring where this guy's Wraith Knight could go. And I was just scrapping for every single point, every single round. I made a mistake, which in hindsight was dumb because I tried to go for a little bit of a gamble for like a 10-point swing. But given that I was already finishing on 7 and I could have gotten 8 like very comfortably instead of maybe getting a 9, I should have probably just gone for the 8 play, which is, I kicked myself afterwards because I was like, man, you know, that wasn't the right way to play it. 10-10 draw, IK versus Tyranids. Our Necron player 19-1 is their Chaos Knights, which is actually kind of understandable because you go first in Necrons and you block them off all the objectives.
And Necrons then did line. So well this tournament. Oh,
I told you, man. I told everyone.
I know. Are good. I know you told everyone. I just didn't believe you.
Warriors are good, man. They're so good. Their T-Sun player, 17-3 against our Custodes. And their GSC beats our Aldaris, 14-6. So an 80-80 did draw against Italy.
Fair
which,
enough.
I wanted to win that one pretty badly. But, you know, you can't get it all right. And then round six. This was a big round.
This is it, man. This is for all the bragging rights.
Yes. So, obviously, round six, we play against Scotland, which is obviously a bit of an interesting dynamic because Ennis Wilson, myself, and Brian know each other pretty well. Brian's obviously in our team Ignite. And, you know, we're on the upswing at this point, right? Mm. You know, we just won our round four. We beat Italy. We drew tight against Italy. And I think, you know, oh, man. I was... at this point, in the back of my head, though, I was pretty sure we were flying close to the sun here. And we were about to get, you know, this was a round, realistically, we were 100% playing for a draw. I think Scotland were clearly the better team on the day. They had the better lists, they had better prep. Overall, average player skill was probably a bit higher than ours. And they 100% deserved to win. Just a better team all around. Our matrix was looking pretty bad into their map. It was pretty grim.
Oh, no.
You know, not only did they have the problem of having Innes and Brian, two phenomenal players, they also had the great Marine list. They had Guard and Tau, and Guard was a huge problem for us. So, yeah, things weren't working great. But there's a cool story I want to share, is that we're at this spot called Beastie Burgers, which is spot in Belgium that a lot of the teams went to because they had great food.
Would recommend.
And we draw Scotland. And we're all sitting down eating and stuff. And I pull the team together and stuff like that. I said, guys, just want to say something for a couple of minutes. I said, guys, it's been a great run. You know, we've already exceeded my expectations as a team. But tomorrow we've got one of the hardest games we're ever going to play. It's not going to be hard because it's harder than Australia. It's going to be hard because we've got a really good shot at getting a draw here. But we might not get it. And I told them, look, I'm going to be going home and doing pairings until 2 a.m. simulations. I'm going to be talking with every single person I know, looking at all the records on their list, dissecting all their lists, and filling in the matrixes, getting stuff done, talking to my friends, trying my best to make sure we can get the best possible scenario for us to get a draw. And I said, but a lot of you guys traveled all the way from New Zealand to play here in Europe. And I know on day one, you said, you know, a couple of people said, we're here just to have fun. And I said, that's all well and good. I said, so tonight, I'm going to be going back and busting my ass. But if you guys want to go out and go to the pub, meet people, hang out, live a little bit in Belgium, I said, that's absolutely fine. I genuinely meant it. That's absolutely fine. Because for me, it's easy. I can get across here. But you guys, it's the first time in Belgium for a lot of, you know, and you want to hang out, meet players and stuff like that. I said, that's absolutely fine. I won't hold anything against anyone who wants to go out tonight. And they were like, yeah, they were all nodding and stuff. And then, so I was like, we need to make a decision now. Are we going to, because we finished eating, I said, we need to make a decision. Are we going to pack up and get the check and go back to the mansion? Or are we going to hang out here tonight? And they were like, pack up, get the matrix done, get the pairings done.
Let's go.
And we all put our fists in the middle and we gave it all. So that was a really proud moment for me. I was like, you know what? For a team to have changed so much over such a little time frame was awesome, right?
Yeah. Proud moment. Gosh.
So yeah, long story short, we ended up getting 69-91 against Scotland. It's difficult to say. I think we outpaired them. But I think it's a lot of times both teams think they outpaired and then some flips happen, right? So it's difficult to say really outpaired, but we managed to get myself in a position where I could potentially 20-0, which is one of the things I really wanted. But the things that we wanted, we didn't get. We wanted to play an Aldari mirror, but Brian very, very smartly dodged that one. And then we wanted to get maybe a bit of a better score against Innes. But we had one of our better lists into Innes, Imperial Knights. I was really hoping we could get 5 out of that. And then we played the GSC mirror, which I was hoping would just be a 10 wash. And then we had Ryan CSM against Aldari, which we were also hoping was going to be fine. So that one was really close. 69-91. I pick up 17-3 against Tau.
Yeah, well,
I was looking like a 20-0, but man, I played so well again.
Did you? What did you think about that list? Was it good?
I think that list really struggled on the mission. So, really cool part. We're doing the tables, And I said, we got the last picks. And I said, Talvez Deathwatch, because it's all sorted out after the first defender, right? Who's playing who? And I said, guys, what tables are left? There's a light, a dense, dense. And I say, they've got the last picks. We got third to last. I said, pick the light table for our matchup, even though it was bad for us. I said, in front of everyone, pick the light table for us. Pick the light table for us. Because I knew that they on the dense table, the Tau really struggle. And that's just kind of how it went. I was able to shut him out. I went first, which is good, but he went second, so big backswing on the mission. But if you're able to desolate it with Plunging Fire, a lot of their chaff out, their whole list just gets very static, because you as Deathwatch can just teleport units and then hit their Crisis Squad wherever they are if they have nothing to hide from. So the Proteus kill team there was great, because I could stage him in a forward ruin. He couldn't come out because I could threaten everything. So he was pretty much locked out of the game. I oath a moment his Crisis Squad in reserve, knowing that he was going to bring up all the rapid ingress to him too. That was a shout out to Jonty. He gave me that idea, which was fantastic, because he did do that. And the only spot I let him, which I mapped out everywhere it could go, if he drops right there, he could get one line to one squad. But then I knew his CP meant that he either couldn't fire and fade and do an overwatch in the same turn afterwards. So yeah, super well played. I rolled a one on my infiltrators and decided not to re-roll it to advance, because I pushed him forward on the turn that he could rapid ingress. So yeah, such a lovely game against, I just want to give a shout out to the guy as well. Alan Davidson. Really lovely game. The guy was straight up a gentleman as well.
Fantastic.
Round 7 against Team Norway.
Final round. You
know, losing to Scotland, it left a bit of taste in my mouth. I really wanted to win that one, but at the end of the day, they were just a straight up better team than us. And if you told me that we were possibly drawing against Scotland before the WTC, I would have been like, you're no way. And I think the only team to maybe outpair us was Norway. They paired very smartly. And they had a bit of a list advantage overall in the Matrix. We end up picking 95 points against Norway, which to me was quite big. Norway are a good team, and they've improved a lot since last year. I played the Deathwatch Mirror. My opponent went first with 15 Desolators.
Oh my God.
A Phobos Liberian Infiltrator unit, which in the Deathwatch Mirror is insanely good. And then in addition, he had a Thunderfire Cannon. So let's just put it this way. The Thunderfire Cannon shuts down my Proteus kill teams because it can't advance and charge because I lose 6 inches of movement. He has 15 Desolators against my 10. Yeah. Pretty big list advantage. I scrape a 10-10 draw there against a guy called Gorm, who was awesome. We did a shot of Jin beforehand. Wicked. Our Eldari finally picks up the better end of that one. 20-0 is their Gene Stealer Cult. And then what are some of the other ones? Necrons beat their T-Suns 14-6. And then a bunch of just 10-10 draws everywhere. We get an 18-2 against their Chaos Demons with our Tyranids. So our Tyranids finally pulling out a positive one there, which was great to see as well.
Your Necron player smashed it.
Bro, he did, man.
Whoa.
Bro, the guy's no joke, man. Like, he only plays TTS and plays Alpha League. Can you imagine how good this guy's going to be if he plays, like, practices against other top players and stuff?
Yeah,
he played really well. He was me and him got along great. I told him, I said, Jonty, I think you've played absolutely incredible the whole tournament. And no shit, 4 hour rounds. You come there, there's 2 minutes left on the clock. He's loving life. His old Necron army's alive. He's moving everything. He's like, yeah, reanimate this guy, do this, having a blast, dude. Typical Necron player, eh? Yeah, so that was awesome. We end up finishing 15th place. Just an absolute amazing tournament. I was pretty excited when we got the award for best newcomer.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah, I basically leapt off my chair and let out a big, let's fucking go. So,
that's immense, man.
What a tournament, man.
What a tournament. And well done to both of our teams.
Yep.
Smashed it. And well done to everyone who played at the WTC. It's a slog, but it's well worth it.
Well done to Scotland as well. They, with Brian from our, Team Ignite, they placed the best I've ever placed. Well done to Belgium with Liam on our team, placing 10th, beating France. And then well done to Jochel with Iceland as well, who they came in the same position, but bigger seed pool as well. And they had some player health issues beforehand and stuff like that as well. So Team Ignite turning up pretty good at the WTC, I think.
Nice spread. It's going to be interesting next year.
There we go. Guys, I think that's going to be us for the day. We did have a part 3, but I've got a work meeting to get to as well. So we're going to call it there. Vic, did you have any closing words that you really wanted to
Closing comments? I think, you know, we'll maybe touch on a little bit more analysis on the meta, jump back into the single side on the next episode. And we can tie in our feelings on WTC and how that affects our preparation going forward from here for the future episodes.
Yep. There we go. This is the 40K Fireside signing out. Big shout out to the WTC, all the event crew, everyone we met there. It was just an absolute blast. And you can expect to see Team Ignite at some team events because all I'm going to say is that, you know, our whole team basically went to the WTC for the first time. And we're going to be pretty freaking good at team events after this.
I think we're definitely going to make that more of a priority. I think,
there we go. Season. Catch you guys later.
Go. Take care.
Got him.
Thank you for listening to the 40K Fireside Podcast. Vic and I hope you've enjoyed listening, and we greatly appreciate any feedback that you can provide after the show.